Right, would anyone like to grab a Bible, please? Ah, Kate's straight in there. And we're looking at Psalm 121. I'll just a quick word of prayer. Lord, thank you for your word in all the different ways it's expressed. Through the written words that we have passed down to us through generations and generations of people who have sought you and that you've encountered in the person of Jesus, your living word, in our minds, in our hearts, through your love. And the words that we speak to each other, Lord, open our minds and our hearts to hear your word. Amen. Okay, Kate.
I look up to the mountains. Does my help come from there? My help comes from the Lord, who made the heavens and the earth. He will not let you stumble and fall. The one who watches over you will not sleep. Indeed, he who watches over Israel never tires and never sleeps. The Lord himself watches over you. The Lord stands beside you as your protective shade. The sun will not hurt you by day, nor the moon at night. The Lord keeps you from all evil and preserves your life. The Lord keeps watch over you as you come and go, both now and forever.
Now, the thoughts that I'm bringing to share is I'm crediting this to the internet, in specifically the Luther Theological Seminary, which is in Minnesota, and comes from a tradition of various Norwegian churches that Norwegian settlers ended up settling in the northern part of the United States, around Minnesota and places like that, and eventually this particular theological training college was born. And I really liked the way that the writer from the college unpacked, as they say, a little bit, Psalm 121. So I'm mainly just going to read this short collection of thoughts about it, but then we'll share some things between ourselves. Psalm 121 is identified by its title as a psalm of ascents. And in our translation, it's padded out a little bit to say, a song for the ascent to Jerusalem. The significance of the term ascents is not certain. The same root word in Psalm 122, verse 4, however, refers to a ritual journey to Jerusalem. That's also mentioned in various other books of the Bible in the Old Testament. So therefore, the heading of Psalm 121 may indicate that the psalm was used by pilgrims travelling to Jerusalem for one of the three yearly festivals. And we find in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 16, verse 16, each year, every man in Israel must celebrate these three festivals, the festival of unleavened bread, the festival of harvest, and the festival of shelters. They must appear before the Lord your God at the place he chooses on each of these occasions, and they must bring a gift to the Lord. All must give as they are able, according to the blessings given to them by the Lord your God. And of course, the place that he chose many years after Moses to be the place that people would come to worship was the temple in Jerusalem. And in fact, this psalm, 121, is located in a group of psalms, from Psalm 120 up to and including Psalm 134, which are placed together for that purpose. You'll see, if you're looking at your Bibles, that each of those, 120 to 134, has this same little superscript above it that's not part of the words, but is just a note that this is a song for the ascent to Jerusalem, or as many Bibles have it more simply, a song of ascents. Now, Psalm 121 seems to be liturgical in character, meaning used actually in worship. And this is a bit indicated by, when you look closely at it, you'll see that there's a shift in the voices through the psalm. It's verses 1 and 2, and possibly verse 4 as well, seem to be voiced by a pilgrim, maybe an individual, or perhaps representing the whole company of travellers. I look up to the mountains. Does my help come from there? My help comes from the Lord, but then he will not let you stumble, as if someone else perhaps is talking to him more. The remainder of the psalm may therefore be the response of a priest, if the setting is maybe departure from the temple, or the words of a travel leader, or maybe one remaining at home, if the setting, you can imagine, could be the home, people waving off a pilgrim who's going up to Jerusalem. At any rate, regardless of the exact orientation of the travellers, the main issue in this psalm is the safety that God provides through constant attention to the faithful pilgrims. The psalm begins with a declaration in verse 1. I lift my eyes to the hills, it says in some translations. And in ours, I look up to the mountains. Which introduces then the central concern of this poem. The question that follows. From where will my help come? But then the answer immediately follows. My help comes from the Lord. Now, of course, this may be reading too much into it, but in many of the cultures and religions of the time, especially those that were in that area and that Israel often found itself drawn into, there was a tradition of worshipping deities up on hilltops, mountaintops, and often throughout the Old Testament there would be this swing where more and more people in Israel would be worshipping these various other gods and carrying out rituals and sacrifices on the hilltops and the mountaintops, and then God would send a prophet or somebody would come and point out that this was really not the way that God had called his people to, and there would be a swing back the other way. The Asherah poles and the temples that were on these hilltops would be taken down, but then often it would go back that way. So maybe here, looking up to the hills is a suggestion, you know, do I find my help in other gods? Maybe. But of course, if we say, no, my help comes from the Lord who made the heaven and the earth, or maker of heaven and earth. Now, this particular way of describing God, the maker of heaven and earth, appears only once in this particular psalm. But its importance can't be overstated. This same label, the same way of describing God, occurs two other times in these psalms of ascent to Jerusalem. You can see it again in Psalm 124, verse 8. Our help is from the Lord who made the heavens and earth. Also in Psalm 134, verse 3. The last of the songs of ascent. Oh, bless the Lord, all you servants of the Lord, you who serve as night watchmen in the house of the Lord. Lift your hands in holiness and bless the Lord. May the Lord, who made heaven and earth, bless you from Jerusalem. And this occurrence almost kind of seems to be potentially an editorial addition when all this group was put together. Maybe sort of finishing off this group of songs of ascent that people go to worship at Jerusalem and worship the Lord together. Even if on a short journey to Jerusalem, any traveller would notice or be reminded of the worship sites which had in the past so many times been devoted to other gods, other deities on the hills. But to confess that Yahweh, the Lord, was the maker of heaven and earth, was by definition to declare all other gods powerless. And interestingly, we can carry this into 2,000 years of Christian history, thinking about this label for God that the church came to. In the Apostles' Creed, we say, I believe in God, the Father Almighty, the creator of heaven and earth. So it's going back to really declaring God's power, and that the one we worship is not just a God, but the God. Going back to Psalm 121, he won't let you stumble and fall. The one who watches over you won't sleep. Indeed, he who watches over Israel never tires and never sleeps. And again, this is a bit of a contrast to a lot of the various sort of deities and gods that that Israel was continually tempted by over the centuries, saying that Israel's God doesn't sleep or some slumber. Many religions and cultures in that part of the world tended to believe that often their gods slept or even died during the winter if they were associated with fertility goddesses and gods and the whole process of the annual cycle of harvest, and that these gods would sort of die or go away during the winter, and then you had to have all these rituals to encourage them to come back, to wake up in the spring to then bring new life. But the God of Israel does not sleep, and therefore can keep constant watch over Israel and over everyone who's coming to Jerusalem to worship and to seek him. And it's interesting to note that this point about the relationship that God's people can have with him and the assurance in him is emphasized by six occurrences of the word keep or keeper just in this very short psalm. Now, the final four verses, the Lord himself watches over you. The Lord stands beside you as your shade. The sun won't hurt you by day or the moon at night. The Lord keeps you from all evil, preserves your life. The Lord keeps watch over you as you come and go, both now and forever. This is kind of a blessing, really. They're confessional, but they're spoken on behalf of the pilgrims. We hear a new, slightly different way of describing God as your shade. You might say that this is a very appropriate way of describing God in a very hot desert climate where people travelling to Jerusalem would be going through, you know, the burning sun and all this kind of thing that would be in the Palestinian countryside. But this metaphor, this way of talking about God, does have other associations that we shouldn't miss. In various other passages, in other psalms like 36 and Psalm 61, the shade of the Lord, Yahweh's shade, is equated with the safety of the temple. So this really kind of makes the point that this idea of thinking about God as the one who shades us is part of a bigger picture of thinking about God as the one who shades, who protects lots of often the rulers of the people, especially in this time, this part of the world. Lots of kings would set themselves up to say that they would be regarded as the, you know, the protector of the people and all this kind of thing. So we've got these different possibilities of difficulties for the pilgrim. The sun by day and the moon by night, which of course is a bit mysterious for us now when we think, well, the moon, how can that cause any harm? You know, you don't get moonburn. But we need to remember that many ancient cultures, and actually our own, in only a relatively short time ago, in maybe a couple of hundred years, believed the moon to be a cause of potential mental health difficulties. This is, of course, where we get the word lunatic from the Latin word luna, for the moon. One who is driven out of their senses by the moon, and lunacy. Also, you know, maybe there's an idea of the dangers of the night as well, bandits and all the rest of it. And of course, we need to remember that in that part of the world, as in actually across the world in many different religions, the sun and the moon are often depicted as deities. I mean, for example, in the Middle East, we've got the ancient Egyptian god Ra, the sun god. And in Mesopotamia, in Babylon, and you know, the slightly further east areas, there's a moon god called Nanna. So maybe in context, protection from the sun and the moon also would ring a slight bell about, oh, you know, protection from a spiritual point of view, from any kind of threat, whatever it may be. And finally, verse 7 and 8. The Lord keeps you from all evil and preserves your life, and the Lord keeps watch over you as you come and go, both now and forever. And reading this, this is clearly a kind of a summary of Yahweh's protection. You know, either a wish, may he keep you from evil, or really a way of saying, even though we have the word may when it's translated from English into English, a statement of what is typical. May he keep you, as in he always does, so may he continue to keep you rather than, oh, I really hope he does. It's a statement of assurance. He will keep you. And of course, at the end, bearing in mind again that this is a psalm that's written for people who are travelling to Jerusalem to worship and then leaving and going home, the Lord keeps watch over you as you come and as you go, which is speaking to us now of wherever we're going, whether we're coming to somewhere, whether we're going away from somewhere. Any journey involves departure and arrival, just depends what your point of view is. But that actually, Yahweh, the Lord, is the one who will always watch over his people, whether they're coming or whether they're going. He's always ahead of them and with them. So that's a few thoughts. But what I thought would be quite good would just to reflect on that, each of us, and think at the beginning, looking up to the mountains, places, you know, whatever the exact meaning of that was, I think we can all have places that we look to for our help before we look to God. And obviously God helps us in many different ways, often through people, through other things. But it's more, where's the centre of the place that we're looking to for help? So what I just thought would be good is just for have a moment or two of silence, and I just encourage us all to just reflect for a minute. What are the places, who are the people that we go to for help? I'm not saying that we shouldn't go to those things, but do we have God in mind when we're looking for help in other places? We may or may not share, depending if people would like to. So let's just have a little think and a pray. Now thinking about this, it may be that I'll say what's on my mind. If anyone else would like to say what's on theirs, feel free, but I'll just say for myself, certainly. Thinking of Nehemiah, as we were this morning and have been and will carry on doing, I know it's good to, when there's issues or things get complicated, to think to yourself and for me to try and work things out in my own mind, but often I feel that I'm actually looking to myself to try to sort things out rather than, like Nehemiah did, thinking, well, that his response being, actually, this is a major problem, I'm being affected by it, but the first thing I'm going to do is pray, and then I'll think and see if there's something that I can do myself to be part of the answer to my prayer. I tend to put it the other way around and think and then go, oh, and then when it's not working, often then think, oh, perhaps I should pray, and then carry on doing more thinking. So that's something that strikes me. I don't know if anyone else has any other thoughts or places that they sometimes go to prayer for help before God.
Sometimes I find it important to go and seek somebody who's experienced what I'm going through. And then, because it may not always be a Christian. And then, because sometimes you get people who say to you, you have to pull yourself together, and they haven't experienced what you're going through. I think that seems to be my step, that you open yourself to somebody who's experienced it, and then take that on board, and then take it to God to help you with.
It's a little bit similar to you, to Doreen, but I also often seek out somebody who, yes, has experience. I treasure also those opportunities to talk with people who know God deeply, and I sense that they can cast a light from their Christian outlook to piece together things that maybe I've been gathering from talking with an expert, yes, but things I've been reading in books, maybe, yes, but to talk it over and to help, for them to help me see it through God's eyes, Jesus' eyes, because they come at it from a deeply personal relationship with God, and I find that's very valuable to me as well, as one of the things I do.
Well, another psalm which picks up that theme, which is one that we can share together, is, of course, the Lord's my shepherd, the one who watches over us. And, of course, the shepherd is the recurrent biblical picture of God, the one who looks after his sheep, who will go the extra mile, bring one back if it's wandering. So let's sing that together as a declaration of faith, effectively.